Many years ago, when Who Wants to Be a Millionaire was at the height of its global success, Major Charles Ingram won the lot, £1 million. He was an ordinary sort of chap who didn't seem to know much, but he survived hard question after hard question, endlessly ruminating, trying out answers, professing his ignorance, somehow fluking the right answers every time, until the biggest moment of his life. And this was it. You can find it on YouTube. We've telescoped it a bit. Listen for the coughing.
This is it. Question number 15 of 15 on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. A number one followed by 100 zeros is known by what name? Google. Megatron. Gigabit. Nanomole. It's worth a million.
I'm not sure. However.
Charles, you haven't been sure since question number two.
I think it's a nanomole, but it could be a gigabit. And I have to say, I don't think I've heard of a Google.
Google.
And I don't think it's nanomole. I don't think it's Megatron. I really do think it's a Google.
But you thought it was a nanomole. And you've never heard of a Google. And there's £1 million involved.
I'm sure it's Google. I think it's a Google. I'm going to play Google. Yeah.
Final answer.
Final answer.
You just won $1 million!
Except he hadn't, and the episode didn't make it to air, and we telescoped that a lot, actually. It was about 10 minutes long, that whole deliberation. Charles Ingram's wife, Diana, was in the audience. She had previously competed and won £32,000. Now, she was doing the odd bit of coughing, but it was another prospective contestant allegedly doing most of it, a man named Tequan Whittick. And he and the Ingrams were found guilty in court of fraud, and their lives were blighted from then on. They never saw the money, of course. Noted playwright James Graham has made television drama out of this television drama. It's on Soho starting this week. It's called Quiz, after his West End play of the same name. His political play, The House, This House, was voted Play of the Decade last year in Bloomsbury Publishing's 60 Years of Modern Plays public vote. He's got a long body of writing work, including some of The Crown. He's with us. Hello, James.
Hi, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. This series, this mini-series, has been very well received in the UK. Now, do you remember that Who Wants to Be a Millionaire episode from the time? What got you interested in the first place?
Well, I remember Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, and I absolutely adored that show growing up. And the experience of being able to try and interrogate, like, why this particular game show completely captivated me as a teenager in terms of the drama and the amount of money they were giving away and the human torture they put people through. I always sort of loved that. But this particular story of an alleged heist of £1 million from a very polite, middle-class, professional English couple, it's just made for television drama. It's an extraordinary story that features a very, very ordinary couple who get so fixated on a particular obsession at a game show. I just think it really raises important questions about how well we can ever know any story, how well we can ever perceive truth and reality when it comes to how we see the world. So, yeah, I feel very lucky to have been able to bring this to a wider audience.
I know it does get that deep, and that's the fascination of it, and we can get to that. Just without giving too much away in advance, The differences between the stage show and the miniseries, please.
So, yeah, this started as a very small play in a south west town in England. And, you know, you can't do a play about Who Wants to Be a Millionaire without asking the audience if you have an audience there. So we absolutely did that. It was very live. It was very interactive. We presented the case for the prosecution and the case for the defense. And then we got the audience to vote twice, and they did. And generally speaking, they always thought that the couple were very guilty of this crime, cheating on a game show at the very beginning. And then they started to convert to more towards the innocence towards the end of the show. And that's not necessarily the sort of the reason for doing it. We're not trying to convince people that this couple are innocent or guilty. We're just trying to raise questions about whether or not our perception of this story has been manipulated, or how we can be manipulated by forces outside of ourselves. It was also really exciting to explore new worlds beyond what the stage play could do, including the culture of quiz obsessives, which I find so fascinating. This story completely encapsulated a whole swathe of very middle-class English professionals who were so obsessed by Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, the game show, that they started forming organizations to try and hack into the show. And it's just a gift. For a writer, that kind of story is just a complete gift.
On YouTube, the major and his wife are made to look as guilty as sin, but the book Bad Show suggested the Ingrams were innocent and stitched up, and the defence counsel for them in court reckoned ITV had only magnified strategic audience coughs out of 192 in all, just to summarise, to make Ingram seem guilty. Now, you're possibly sick of being asked this by now, but if the verdict was wrong, a significant miscarriage of justice was done that ruined people's lives, yeah?
It's a really good question. And I find this really hard, actually, because I don't think it's the responsibility of television drama to overturn court verdicts, which, as we at the time were speaking, that is the verdict. They were found guilty of this crime. But I do think it's the responsibility of drama to humanise characters and people that have been demonized and made to feel really unsympathetic. And I think that's the main point. Whether or not the Ingrams cheated on this game show or not, I think it's really valid to say that the level of punishment they received in terms of the major being decommissioned from the army, and in terms of the scrutiny and the humiliation that they received in terms of the tabloid newspapers and people mocking them in the street and attacking them in the street, I think that was probably disproportionate. So that's really what we're raising. We're trying to use the power of what I consider to be drama, which is to remind people that these are human beings, whether they did it or they didn't do it. I think cheating on a game show probably doesn't deserve the punishment that they received.
It's interesting you say that, because we are in such an age that eviscerates people on social media, and that was slightly pre. But his children went through torture. He had bags of excrement thrown at his house. Yes, we understand what you're saying, but £1 million was at stake, I suppose.
That's true. Look, I mean, it was, if they did it, it was a crime, and you know, people felt it very keenly. People got very emotional about this story. I just think, actually, at the end of the day, people's certainties around this story, about their definite guilt, and as you mentioned, you can watch the major's performance on YouTube, and it does appear incredibly cut and dry. He did play the game very strangely, and he kept changing his mind. He kept listing the answers, and the prosecution found these 19 significant coughs, which were on the right answers as he listed them, and then he changed his mind toward the right answer. I think in the age when social media and new broadcast news media like to reduce everything to being black and white and quite simple, I think this was almost the origin of that. This was a story when 24-hour news media was beginning to emerge, and people were looking for heroes and villains and right and wrong. And I remember watching this story and being completely convinced of their guilt. And actually, as you mentioned, the book that came out started to explore all of the inconsistencies and all of the paradoxes in this evidence, it absolutely isn't cut and dry. And yet the scale of humiliation and the scale of reputational damage that he suffered, I think, is probably disproportionate. So it's I think in the age of when you and I and everyone else are all really anxious about the nature of truth and reality, I think it's quite an important question to ask.
Yeah.
James Graham is with us talking about his mini-series quiz. Can we tease out some more of the cut and dryedness or lack of it just for the listeners? Charles Ingram had been, as I understand it, a NATO peacekeeper, a Bosnia veteran. He had an unblemished army career, solid status in the community. He may appear to have been a complete bumbler on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, but he was apparently in Mensa, according to the Daily Mail anyway. He had university degrees in engineering and management. It's a puzzle, even the way it appears.
You're totally right. And I find it still very puzzling. And I've met Charles Ingram, the real person, you know, as a TV production. We were very passionate about inviting the real people into the process, getting them on set, meeting the actors, speaking to them, researching everything that they wanted to talk to us about. He's a real puzzle. But you're right. When you watch that performance, you look at somebody who is performatively quite dim and unintelligent, and yet he gets to £1 million, and that's the first alarm that caused the producers to think he must be cheating. This guy can't possibly know what a Google is for the £1 million question. And yet I just don't think that's quite true. Having spent time with him, he's an English eccentric. He bumbles, and he's sort of that middle class kind of affectations where he seems like he isn't really connected with the world. And yet you forget he's got a degree. And yes, we discovered that during the trial, he actually applied himself to be accepted into Mensa, which means he's in the top 2% of IQ in the country, and he was accepted. And yet the way he was presented to be in the trial, and certainly in the media, was that he's this bumbling idiot. So I just think, I think something way more interesting is going on here. And we discuss in the show that the reason why he behaved the way he did is because he wanted to be entertaining. He wanted to be a contestant that people remembered and that would stay in the chair for as long as possible. And that might go some way to explaining what is, I totally admit, a quite baffling way to play Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Or, as you say, he could also be guilty. But again, for people who haven't seen the episode, and I know that you are interested for a larger reason, but some more of the nuts and bolts. It came down to the coughs, supposedly supplied by his wife Diana in one instance and a man named Tekwin Whittick in the rest of the instances. But there was an 18-minute gap during the show where no one coughs and the major was still answering the odd thing correctly. He didn't know Tekwin Whittick, although Diana did from other quiz shows. Any supposed collusion, am I right, would have all had to be organised the night before in a real hurry over the phone because they didn't know they'd be on the same show. It was pretty circumstantial, some of it.
That's completely correct. So actually, the majority of the evidence was entirely circumstantial, and people had to put the jury, I guess, had to put that together and assume that based on all of the evidence that was circumstantial, that he did it. But it does require a leap. And of course, ultimately, as we say in the drama, we can't know with any reasonable doubt that he didn't know the answer to those questions, even though he behaved strangely. But you're right. I remember watching this story unfold as a teenager and being absolutely convinced by their guilt. He behaved strangely in the chair. He kept listing and relisting the answers, and then he would change his mind. And then there are these 19 significant coughs, which roughly coincide with him listing the right answer on the question. But it's only when you start to interrogate the evidence and you realize that during the course of that entire show, there were over 190 coughs on the wrong answers from all over the studio, that you start to sort of imagine yourself as that major in that chair, and people are coughing constantly, and yet we're expected to believe that he recognized the coughs that were significant from a man he'd never met. He didn't know whether this guy was clever, good at quizzes, knew the information, and yet he risked £1 million in trusting that this cough coming from him occasionally from behind him somewhere was signifying the right answers. I think there's just a lot of grey areas that requires us to make a huge leap of faith. And I think that's also what we want to talk about in the drama, that often in these kinds of stories, you just really want there to be a bad guy. You want there to be a justifiable, clear reason for why something is happening. And there'd be good guys and bad guys, and the bad guys get punished. And actually, as we all know, life is often way more complicated than that.
Yes, and you nail down those shades of grey. Whittick, you'd know more about this case far more than me, but Whittick was confirmed, it seems, you know, the so-called cough supplier, to have had a medical predisposition to cough. And the other thing was that he wasn't actually very good at quizzes, unlike unlike Diana Ingram. It's not as if he had a superstar in the audience who knew every answer coughing.
That's true. So when you think through what the conspiracy actually was, you would assume that the person this couple have enlisted to cough on the right answers must be a genius. And what a thrill to have them in the audience coughing on the right answers. But unfortunately for Tequan Whittick, bless him, he loves game shows and he loves quizzes. But actually, he's never done particularly well. And he, to my surprise, when I revisited the story, I didn't know that following the Majors £1 million win, it was actually Tequan Whittick that got into the chair next. And he only won £1,000 because he got the answers wrong. He didn't know the answers. And there were other examples of him appearing on game shows where he doesn't know the questions. And we're not trying to ridicule him, but the point is that here's a guy who loves quizzes, but ultimately he's not particularly good at it. And why would you enlist somebody who isn't great at quizzes and has an uncontrollable cough to engage in your grand coughing conspiracy? The other thing I didn't realize until I looked into it was that, as you mentioned, these people actually never met. And the way that it was presented in the media at the time, 17 years ago, was that this was a carefully orchestrated conspiracy. But actually, the Major and his wife had never met this stranger who was in the fastest finger first seat. They just spoke to him on the phone over the course of 8 minutes. And you think, would you really risk that level of danger when you've got studio mics and cameras and lights and the host of the show a couple of feet in front of you? Would you really risk that level of danger when someone you've never met is trying to help you win £1 million? I think there are so many uncertainties around this.
Yes. Well, perhaps they did. Guilty as sin, said Jeremy Clarkson after watching Quiz. but you have an audience whose opinions shift. What has been the preponderant reaction, James, from people over the years after seeing your play and now the miniseries? I mean, how many think ITV should now give the Ingrams the check?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And I do feel nervous about speaking about this because, I as I said before, I don't really think that it's the job of dramas or plays to change a verdict. That has to be done in court and that has to be done based on evidence and rational discussion. For me, it's purely that the court of public opinion was so weighted on their guilt and they suffered so much humiliation. I mean, look, it's a gift, isn't it? This whole story, it's a very privileged sounding man and his manipulative wife, and they're very middle class and they come onto the most popular game show on earth. And they steal £1 million. It kind of invites that kind of populist mob mentality, hatred towards them. They're the perfect villains. And in a way, I just think that was so disproportionate. So yeah, I mean, look, we'll see. I mean, the truth is that the Ingrams are still appealing. They maintain their innocence and they're going to appeal the case later this year or the beginning of next year with new evidence that suggests that those 19 coughs didn't come from one particular source, which would destroy the prosecution's case. But also, like you say, look, maybe they did it. Maybe they did it. I've got no idea. In a way, that's not really the point of the drama. The point of the drama is to look at the human beings in this situation and just sort of like ask an audience to imagine what would it feel like if you got briefly too obsessed with a thing, a sport, a game show, anything, and suddenly found yourself in the public gaze. I think that's the most important question.
Yeah, and this is an era now, an epoch, where we don't look at the human beings so much, do we? We just nail them on their first opinions or first words or first appearances. That's the problem, isn't it?
I think that's true. And as you rightly said, this was a time 20 years ago, way before the age of social media. And I can't imagine what it would have been like then. But even back then, they suffered hugely under basically just what was a really entertaining story. And I have to confess, I was part of that. I was obsessed by this story. I couldn't believe how thrilling it was to watch this couple who had the audacity to cheat on a game show live in front of cameras and an audience. And they'd been found, and they'd been found in this ludicrous way that somebody was coughing, and that's vaguely comic and vaguely ridiculous and vaguely silly. It's just the perfect story. So I'm absolutely sure I was there with my pitchfork and my fire, enjoying the schadenfreude of seeing these people fall. it's only 20 years later do I think, yeah, there's something really disquieting about that whole culture.
The Ingrams may appeal, as you say, and from my reading of it, it's partly off the back, although you're not taking sides, partly off the back of the quiz. They've been inspired to, I think, haven't they?
They've been working on it for a few years. They've been looking at what new technology can split the sound in terms of determining where the coughs came from and assessing whether or not they came from one particular person. But you're right. It's a very strange feeling as a writer to sort of be very aware that they announced their appeal in the British media the day after the episode where we present their defense. And it's both, look, it's both thrilling to think that you're part of that conversation, but also you have to check yourself that that you're not you're ironically not part of the thing that you're criticizing in the show, which is the way in which people can be manipulated by narratives and perception and stories. But no, you're right. The day after we presented their fictional defense, they announced that they were appealing off the back of the popularity of the show. So it's kind of strange, it's kind of ironic.
Well, their lives have been blighted, haven't they, the three of them and presumably their children and so on. I see last year the Ingrams went bankrupt for the fourth time. That's sad.
That's true. Yeah. So what happened following their guilty verdict was that the army major was decommissioned from the British Army and they've been made constantly bankrupt. At the moment, as we speak, they make the majority of their living by selling jewellery on a market stall. And they are occasionally recognised given the popularity of that performance in the UK. They are quite often recognised by members of the public who frequently, unimaginatively, cough whenever they see them, even though ironically he wasn't the one doing the coughing. So yeah, they have suffered a lot. I don't underestimate the scale of the crime. It was £1 million, as you say, but it's been a pretty traumatic 20 years. And we tried to kind of recognise that when we were bringing this story back to public scrutiny, and in a way that's often difficult as a writer. You want to involve people, you want to involve the real life people, get them on set, get them meeting the actors, get them interviewing, whilst also recognizing that you have a duty of care, I think, to making sure that they don't feel overwhelmed by that level of new scrutiny that you're inflicting upon them.
That duty of care of yours is interesting because you've got the playwright's sympathy, the writer's empathy, and you are still interested in their lives. You haven't just written the play and sent it off. You actually are genuinely interested in them, aren't you?
I am, and look, I don't think a dramatist is the same thing as being a journalist. I don't think, I mean, you know, you guys do that better than I ever could. It's not about holding people to account. I think my job in inserting stories into real life events is to do something different. It's to make an audience sort of emotionally walk in the footsteps of people they wouldn't normally consider doing that for. Sometimes often quite unsympathetic characters. I've written plays about Rupert Murdoch and in the UK, Dominic Cummings, who is the head of Vote Leave, who is now Boris Johnson's special advisor. And even though these characters are often quite controversial and problematic, I just think that's the weapon of drama. I think that's a weapon of art. It forces an audience to go, even though I disagree with these people based on their actions or based on their politics, a film or television drama or play forces you to briefly try and understand what it's like to be them and what they think their motivation is and what they think they're doing that's good. And in this age of, I guess, empathy deficit, I think that's probably quite a useful endeavour and probably what the power of drama is in real life events.
Well, it's certainly powerful, judging by all the reviews. So congratulations on it, James, and very nice of you to have a chat with us.
You're welcome. I hope everyone enjoys it. Thank you very much.
James Graham and quiz on Soho later this week.